Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Thursday, March 26th, 2026 in the Gregorian calendar and the 8th of Nisan, 5786 in the Hebrew calendar. Stay tuned for the end of the show where we have a Torah thought from our spiritual guide, Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York. Now, let's get to our special interview. Today we are speaking with Eli Beer, founder and president of United Hatzalah, Israel's largest fully volunteer-based emergency first response organization. It's one of the fastest response networks in the world. His mission began at just 6 years old after witnessing a tragic accident that could have been prevented if there was help that came sooner. By 15, he was already volunteering as an EMT here in Israel. Today, United Hatzalah has more than 8,100 volunteers across Israel using innovations like AmbuCycles and drones, which we're going to talk about, to reach patients within minutes and provide care to hundreds of thousands each year, regardless of their background. Does not matter whether Jewish, Christian, Druze, Muslim, it does not matter. Beyond the organization, Eli is a globally recognized humanitarian and social entrepreneur whose resilience, including surviving a critical case of COVID-19, continues to inspire his life's work. We speak about all of that in the interview, but you should really stay tuned until the end of the show because I believe that his personal story about being in a COVID coma for a month is the most gripping part of today's show. I nearly cried when we were recording it. A special note to everyone, please keep this in mind. Don't be afraid. At the end of the podcast, I get an early warning alert and I had to end our interview and run into the shelter, and that came through in our broadcast. Luckily, the alert came right as we were wrapping up. I just want to note that to you so that you don't get scared when you hear it at the end. Hello, Eli Beer. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. I'm so excited to be with you.
Just about a month, actually, since February 28th, when this operation between Israel and Iran began. What has the last month been like for you and for your teams?
Well, we knew that this is about to happen. We, United Hatzalah, were getting ready for a big attack. We didn't know how it's going to look. We had no plans. No one gave us this is what's going to happen, what day and everything. But we are in touch with the home front command of Israel, the Israeli government, the Ministry of Health, to tell us to get ready for, God forbid, if something happens. They were preparing for a very big attack from Iran as a retaliation for Israel's attack in the United States. We weren't sure how it's going to be, but we were planning to be in a situation where thousands of victims all around Israel, we're talking about thousands of people, not a lot. I mean, people were killed. So, of course, we had to prepare for it. Drills, we did drills all around the country. And we were very busy with drills. You know, if you, they always say in Hebrew, if you prepare for Shabbat, you have food for Shabbat. If you prepare for an attack, you prepare properly, you could deal with an attack. And that's what we actually were doing for the last few months. And luckily, it's a lot less than what we expected, thank God.
I think that Israel has a specialty in preparing for attacks. Have you spoken to other rescue and emergency organizations in other parts of the world? What's the difference between those organizations and what you're doing in Israel?
Well, I was just on phone calls yesterday with the Hatzalah volunteers in London. You know, they just went through a massive attack, luckily not on human lives, but on poor ambulances of theirs that were burned by anti-Semites, by probably a pro-Hamas members who live in London who burned down ambulances of the Jewish community in London. And I was just talking to them. It was devastating for them to deal with something like that. We're dealing with lives here. We're dealing with volunteers who died, unfortunately, in the last 2.5 years. We had a lot of volunteers who gave their own life. So we were just, you know, they are going through a very big trauma of how do you deal with a situation where you wake up and all of a sudden find out that a fleet of 4 ambulances were burnt in the center of London. And this month, we lost a volunteer of ours, Ronit Elimelech, a volunteer who ran into shelter with 3 little children. One of them is with autism, and the other one is on the spectrum, and she has a beautiful 16-year-old as well. And they 3 children, she ran into the shelter. She ran outside to help her mother, and she's a United Hatzalah volunteer, so she's experienced. But when she was helping her mother get to the shelter, a missile from Iran hit her and her mother and killed her on the spot.
And, yes, that was in Beit Shemesh, is that right?
Correct. That was in Beit Shemesh, in the old part of Beit Shemesh. And that was devastating for all of us, and we were traumatized from it. I was there. I saw the remains of her. It's not so simple to see situations like that. And we prepare for a lot of things, but you don't prepare for all of a sudden meeting a person you liked a lot and, you know, seeing the situation and finding that the only leftover from her is maybe a few bones. That's it. And this is really devastating.
That's really devastating and difficult. And it brings me back to my coverage at the forensic centers after October 7th, when forensic scientists were pouring through the remains of babies and young adults and adults after October 7th, trying to identify people. And it was, unfortunately, Israel has just been through so much tragedy in the last few years. So I actually wanted to talk about those 4 ambulances that were set ablaze just days ago in London. First of all, can you tell us about how the different Hatzalah organizations work? Because I understand that United Hatzalah, which you're operating from Israel, is a separate entity from the Hatzalah ambulances that were lit ablaze in London. Can you explain the way that the different branches work, the way that the different organizations work? And then I'd love for you to share, what is your response to that? To the fact that somebody came out and lit 4 ambulances that are meant to save people and lit them on fire?
Well, the different Hatzalahs operate, each one individual. Like the Hatzalah of Northwest that this happened to is separate than Hatzalah in Gateshead or in Manchester, or even in London, they have a few branches that are separate. This is Hatzalah of Northwest. They also spell it a little different. So organizations start in different communities and they call themselves Hatzalah. We all with the same idea of immediate response from the community. The idea of Hatzalah, very different than other EMS organizations, is that it's a volunteer service, that it's a community-based emergency response, and that none of the Hatzalahs charge. Many different organizations in Israel, we are called United Hatzalah of Israel. And the reason is about 20 years ago, right? This July will be 20 years. Right during the Lebanon War, the second Lebanese War, when missiles were flying into Israel, I brought together majority of the Hatzalahs in Israel. We were a lot of different branches, like in New York or like in London and different parts. And I said, let's unite everyone under one. It was the hardest thing I ever did in my life. In 2006, during the war, the Lebanon War, I thought it would be the worst war of my life. I actually thought it would be the end of Israel. When I saw the missiles flying into towards Haifa and towards other cities in the north, I was shocked, and I was almost sure it's going towards Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. And I was very scared that this could be the end of Israel. That's when I got all my friends together and I said, let's unite. Let's build one organization. I said, we need to be united. Even if we're not Jewish, anyone lives in Israel who cares about this country, wants to be safe. We don't want missiles killing us or killing our neighbors or killing anyone else. So let's fight together and save people's lives. And I said to myself, I'm going to build an organization that will be ready for any situation. Not like what I saw then, where people were waiting for days for help. I remember an old man, he was 80 years old. He was in a bomb shelter in Nahariya, who waited for 2 days for help. And it was just, no one is really prepared.
You mentioned the name. Can you tell us what's the meaning behind the word Hatzalah?
Hatzalah means rescue in Hebrew, or save. And really, if you think about it, the reason why we call it Ichud Hatzalah, United Hatzalah, because we united people together for a mission, and our mission is to get there in 90 seconds. Now, not always we could get there in 90 seconds. The more volunteers we have, the faster we will get there. So that's why we focus on training more and more volunteers. That's why we cross through communities, we cross through cities, and we're like Uber of lifesavers, but we do this for free.
I'd also like for you to share with our listeners from around the world that don't know that the first responders of Israel are all volunteers. And I think that that's really baffling for a lot of people that are used to institutions. So can you tell us a little bit about that, those cultural divides?
So I want to say, so my personal story really started when I was a young boy and I was growing up in Beit Vagan in Jerusalem, and I saw a bus blow up in front of my eyes. I was a child and I saw the smoke and the fire. It was a small neighborhood and six people died that day. It was a Friday afternoon. And since that day, thinking about the people laying there for help, screaming for help, I couldn't stop think of why did it take so long for ambulances to come to save these people. Seeing what the Jews went through in Europe and how many Jews were murdered, and no one was there to help them. And I always said to myself, when I grow up, I want to save people's lives. And I had a dream of one day I will get to the situation where I will save so many Jews, I might even save 6 million Jews. And with this dream, I grew up and I went to volunteer when I was 15 years old in the back of an ambulance. I became an EMT very young. And I realized being in the back of an ambulance, it's amazing. It's really helpful. You help a lot of people. But if you really want to make a difference, if you really want to get there on time to save someone, you need to be in the community when it happens. You need to be responding from it within the community. And that's where the idea was to go ahead and start a volunteer corps that will come before ambulances, that will fill in the gap between an ambulance getting a call until the ambulance actually arrives.
Can you share with us about the emergency response in Israel? I'm correct that there's only volunteer emergency first responders, right?
Well, so we have in Israel amazing response. We have Magen David Adom, who are national ambulance services. They do a great job. We also have a lot of ambulance companies in Israel. In addition to Magen David Adom, they have about 65 or 70 ambulance companies that are spread all around the country. The second largest ambulance company is called Yossi Ambulance. They have Shachal, Netali, and many ambulance services. United Hatzalah is very unique. Our job is not really transport, although we do some transports. But our main job is to fill in the gap of the 90 seconds. That's where we want to get to. So not everywhere we get there yet, but we work with ambulance services like Magen David Adom and others that when they have a call, they share it with us. And most of the time, and many of the times, we get there quick. So we start stabilizing these people. And when they arrive, they could take over and take the people to the hospital. And today with our technology, which is mind-boggling, it's really incredible. We have AI technology that helps us to actually predict where the next emergencies are about to happen, which is interesting.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Yes, we use data of over 10 years of emergencies that we responded to, that we got. And this data gives us the indication where most likely the next emergency is about to happen. And this gives us the ability to wait for the emergency closer to where it might happen.
You've introduced a drone unit, is that correct?
Yes. We're very
Can
proud
you
of
tell
our
us how that has changed the game for you?
Well, you know, the world is changing so quickly. You know, I just spoke about the AI technology that we're using. We're probably one of the first in the world that uses this. But now we have these drone units that all around the country, volunteers who are professional drone operators. And these drones have infrared. They could actually feel the cameras of the drones could see heat of a body of a human being or animal and could find lost people. If these are old people that have got lost, some of them have dementia, or children. But now we're using them a lot for the missile attacks that we have. Every time they have a missile attack in Israel, whenever you see a building collapse or part of a building collapse, like you saw in Arad the other day, or in Dimona or in Tel Aviv, we send the drones up in the air. So instead of searching through the building, which we do anyways, but it takes a lot longer, we put the drones in the air and they start searching through the buildings. It's incredible. We found people alive because of these drones.
That was really fascinating. I've never heard of that before. And I could imagine that at this time where we are unfortunately having so many missile impacts in Israel, that this technology is really useful. I've been out in the field to a lot of the places that you just mentioned. I was in Arad. I was in Dimona, in Beit Shemesh, here in Tel Aviv, where I live. And at all of these sites, there's just so much destruction. There's so much debris. And often there's people underneath that debris. And it's really wild. I want you to take us through the numbers that you have from this war. How many people that you've saved, how many people were injured, any facts and figures that you can share with us, and just generally tell us what has the last month looked like for United Hatzalah here in Israel. It's been very, very hectic for the people who are leading their private lives. So I can only imagine what an uptick it's been in calls for United Hatzalah since February 28th when war got started up again with Iran.
Well, in a regular day, we would treat around 2,000 calls that arrived to United Hatzalah. And these are calls from accidents. We have many car accidents, including during missile attacks. Some of them are even worse. During a missile attack, people are looking for places to hide. I sort of put my front of my eyes today when I was in Talpiot, and all of a sudden had a siren, and I saw someone almost crash into, someone was on the street, crossing the street, and someone just went so fast, almost killed this person. And you see a lot of accidents happening because of the stress. During these days, we see an increase of 20% of calls that are coming in, either indirect related to the missile attacks or the stress all around it. And these are a big toll on the organization. We just see this in the last few weeks. We're talking about almost a month. It's coming close to a month that we're having this, that the toll over the organization, because a lot of volunteers of ours are called into service. So we can't just neglect the calls, because what's happened is usually the five closest volunteers get an alert. They're the closest to every emergency. But now, because we have a lot of volunteers who were drafted to Miluim
duty,
the army duty that they have to do, reserves, so a lot more volunteers that are staying and not going to Miluim have to go out to more calls. So this is a big toll on the organization, also a big cost on the organization. We have an increase of operation cost of another extra $50,000 a day, nothing to do with medical supplies, just operational costs. We have the drone unit that we're putting all over the country. We have dispatch and command centers on wheels. We have a ER on wheels that we send out to emergencies like terrorist attacks, like big missile attacks. So like you saw in Arad, we had an ER that we put on the field that anyone who needed help, we didn't have to send everyone to the hospital. So many people had small cuts or just emotional support that they needed from our psychotrauma. So we have a lot more calls than a regular day.
Thank you for going through that. There's one thing that is a little personal that really touched me when I was looking you up, and it was that you were in a really deep COVID sickness in Miami. I understand that you're coming up on 6 years from your enormous recovery. You were in a coma, or you were, I don't know what the medical term is that they use, but you were definitely not with us for about a month, if I have that correct. And I think that it is sort of something that we see. For example, I believe that there was a story back in COVID which someone producing the vaccines got the COVID virus themselves. And sometimes it happens that the very person who is delivering life-saving help is the person who actually needs life-saving help. And I'm confident that the amount of time that you were in a hospital, I mean, ask anyone, no one wants to be in a hospital even for a half a day. And you were in a hospital for upwards of a month. How did that experience change the way that you operate today and the way that you see that mission today? And take us through that story.
Well, I love your question because I learned a lot from what happened to me. I was visiting Miami, which I love. It's my home. I would call it away from home. I mean, I stay in Miami a big part of the year. I live there. And I live so many places. Like I told you before, I am on the air so much, my kids call me Avinu Shebashamayim.
Tell us what it means in English for our listeners that don't speak Hebrew.
Our Father up in heaven, like our Father in the sky. So they call me, it's like a prayer for the country, you say Avinu Shebashamayim. And I spent a lot of my time in Miami, and I ended up March 2020, 6 years ago, not feeling well. I had fever, I was coughing, I wasn't breathing well. I ended up in the hospital. I was probably the second patient in the intensive care unit, ICU. The first one was Rabbi Lipsker, who I met a couple of days before, and I was hugging him. And we ended up both in the ICU. The people in Miami are amazing. I have so many friends. The community were trying to help me. No one knew what to do. The doctors didn't even know what to do. And then they told me they have no choice but to induce me into coma and to literally put me to sleep and put me on a ventilator. And I was always on the side of being with the paramedics that put people on ventilators. I never been on the side of getting ventilators. So it was very scary. I asked the doctor, what's my chances of survival? And he looked at me, he said, well, we don't really know, but according to what we see coming out of China, you have a 5% chance of survival. So I said, okay, I have to call my kids and my wife to say goodbye. My wife's amazing. My wife, actually, Gitti, is the reason I'm so successful. She is the one pushing me to do everything. She's incredible. She's behind the scenes, but also she's a paramedic and she's a lifesaver. She's a volunteer of United Cell as well. She goes at the calls. She was there on October 7th, of course, fighting in the Gaza District area. So my wife gets a phone call from me on Friday night. I say to her, Gitti, this is 6 years ago. I said, I don't think I'll survive. I just want to say goodbye to the kids. And she was like upset at me that I'm saying this. I said, I'm very serious. I don't think I'll make it.
Oh my goodness. What a crazy call.
And I was a healthy guy, you know, like I'm bold, but I never had anything else but it. So that's it. and I told my wife, like, this is it. And I called my kids. My daughter was 12 years old then, Adina. And she was crying so much. She said, you know, I said, just be a good Jew. Just be a good person. Be, you know, I told all my kids, do good things in your life. Focus on doing good things. There's so many people who focus their life on bad things. Don't be one of them. Focus your life on good. Do chesed, do kindness. And I thought I'm never going to wake up. And a month later, I woke up. And when I woke up, I was wearing a diaper. I was very sick. I couldn't even get up. I couldn't even pick up my hand. I didn't know where I was. I thought I was kidnapped by Hamas. My wife, they put my wife on the phone, and I said to her in Hebrew, call the FBI. She said, why? I said, the Hamas. She was laughing like you're laughing. And I got very upset. I said, Hamas kidnapped me and you're laughing? I really thought I was kidnapped. This is before October 7th. This is 6 years ago. And I saw these weird people wearing all these uniforms. And I didn't remember I ever went to Miami. And I was in a coma. So it had so much medicines in me. And it was so bad. I was imagining things. And she said, no, you weren't kidnapped. I said, yes, I was. Call the FBI. Anyways, 2 or 3 days later, I realized where I was. And thanks to incredible people who helped me, a lot of the Jewish community in Miami, outside of Miami. And I have a special thanks to Miriam Adelson and her husband, Sheldon Adelson, who sent their plane to pick me up. And I had hundreds of people in Miami follow the ambulance to the airport. And I went on an airplane. It was the only flight going into Israel there. And when I landed, I saw over 1,000 volunteers waiting for me on ambucycles and ambulances. It was like a brigade of welcoming in the airport. I actually thought it was my funeral because I was still illusioning things. And I realized, I learned from that a lot. And the thing I learned from the most is I always taught United Hatzalah volunteers, you know, we're the only EMS organization in Israel that doesn't charge for service. When we treat people for emergencies, it's totally for free. You call an ambulance in Israel, you must pay. So we come as volunteers. We don't charge for service. I said, when you treat someone, go down to their eye level. If someone is on the floor, go down to the floor and look at them in the eyes so you can be in the same level they feel comfortable with you. I always taught that in my classes when I taught. I always said, you are Hatzalah. You're not coming in, you're not union, you're just regular volunteers from the community. Go down to your floor, even if you dirty your pants, and stay and go to their level. After I realized what I went through, that I was wearing a diaper, I was so embarrassed when I needed help from the nurses to change my diaper. I realized that we need to go a few inches lower than the eyes of our patients. To elevate them, to make them feel very comfortable. Not that we're in the same level. They are higher level than us. And I started teaching my volunteers in Israel, in United Hatzalah, when you treat your patients, they're in the worst situation of their lives. Otherwise, they won't call you. Make them feel good.
That's very touching. Thank you for sharing that. That was so touching. And I think that for me, I had a missile hit my home in June 2025, and my home was blown up, and I had to be rescued by emergency first responders. I don't know who they were. I think they were actually Army. I think the Army came. And it changed the way that I behave as a reporter. It changed the way that I approach people when I am looking for a soundbite on the scene. It changed the way that I ask questions to people who have just lost their entire home. And moreover, I'm able to, when I'm done with my interview, give those people my phone number and invite them to call me, because I have unfortunately 9 months of information in the months following that event that I can share, whether it be which authorities to reach out to, who's helpful, who's not helpful, what you need to do. One woman that I approached in Tel Aviv, I said to her, the first thing that you need to do is call a storage company and have them come over here and take as much of your salvageable items and furniture that you can and get it out of your apartment right now. And no, what's that?
Very smart idea.
Well, I lived it, and unfortunately, I had things robbed and stolen. I had air conditioners pulled out of my wall. I had my jewelry box emptied out by thieves that entered my home just moments after it got hit. And these are the types of things that you're not thinking about, right? So just relating to you, when you're treating somebody who's wearing a diaper, you've never actually been the one wearing a diaper, so you don't know how that feels. And so I think sometimes we go through these things so that we can have a sensitivity when we are on the other side. And so I'm very inspired and encouraged by your story. And Kol hakavod, all the respect goes to you after these 6 years that you returned to health. Can you send us off today with maybe a summary of the war that we're going through for Hatzela and some words of encouragement or words of inspiration that you can share with everybody? Because not only are people in Israel in need of words of inspiration, but people around the world who are worried for us here in Israel. And by the way, Americans that I'm speaking with who are concerned and worried about themselves in the United States, they're worried and bracing for an Iranian attack. So what can you share with us today?
Well, I am very optimistic. I'm thankful to the Israeli government, to the Israeli secret services. Of course, the Mossad was... They deserve to get the Nobel Prize, the Mossad. Of course, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, and the government of the United States for supporting Israel. I think this was the most important war we had since the Independence War. I really feel like this is the second Independence War that we're going through since October 7th. And I think that if we didn't have October 7th, unfortunately, this is a very tough thing I'm saying, we wouldn't have woken up to take care of a big problem, which is Iran. Iran was preparing to destroy and kill every single one of us here in Israel. That's what their big plan was. This wasn't a secret. They wrote it in their websites. Hamas had that in their websites. Hezbollah had it on their websites. Iran, for the last 40 years, 47 years, we're talking about doing the second Holocaust even better than the first Holocaust against every Jew in Israel. Cleaning out Israel from Jews, and maybe non-Jews too. So I think this war is, we're winning this war. There was no doubt about it. I mean, if we ever imagine that we will have a war coming, if you asked me a year and a half ago if this will happen, I wouldn't imagine this. Iran was the scariest thing to deal with. Now, we were always afraid because hundreds of thousands of missiles, which you see they have, and we were afraid about a nuclear weapon. Now we know that this is very far away from us. And I really believe that within a few weeks, we will have a total victory. And a total victory for me means Am Yisrael Chai. That's what I mean. We will be surviving. We will be alive. We will be flourishing. Am Yisrael Chai for the next many, many generations to come. But we must remember one thing. We must stay united. And that's why I built United Hatzela 20 years ago during the Lebanese War. And we must remember that the only way to survive this place, the Middle East, is with Jews get along with other Jews. And this is my main focus that I'm doing now, bringing secular Jews, Haredi Jews, Mesorati Jews, which is traditional Jews, Reform, conservative, every type of Jew in one organization, United Hatzela. But it's not only me. We all have to embrace this. We need to find ways of how to get along with each other. I know we have a big debate coming up with the service of Haredi people in the army. I am dealing with it now. I just came out of a meeting before about and my plan is 10,000 Haredi people that they could serve in United Hatzela in different programs that we have. They could serve as they do the army. Not everyone will do the army. We have to accept it. My son is in the army now. My daughter is going to the army. All my kids served. And we want everyone to serve, but we know that it's not possible. And if we're going to continue fighting about it, not trying to find a solution, it's not going to be good for Israel. So this is one of my main focuses. After we finish with Iran, and I have no doubt we're going to finish with Iran, Khomeini and all his children, like they said, Haman and his 10 children, they're all going to disappear. We're going to have a new Iran, a freed Iran, and we're going to have peace with many more countries. But what's going to be with us here in Israel, among the Jews? Look at you. You live in a beautiful community. I live in a beautiful community. But what about the communities next door to us? How do we get along with them? And how do we approach everyone and said, okay, we have now a chance to make Israel a beautiful country for the next generations, but we need to get along with each other. And this is one of my main focuses that I'm doing through United Hatzela, but I want other organizations to do the same.
Thank you so much. I think that you're absolutely, totally correct. I've been covering the political situation here in Israel, and before October 7th, there were protests every weekend, and there was a lot of unrest about the judicial reform. And as soon as that erupted, that's when October 7th happened. And so I agree with you entirely that there is a big need for Israel to be united. And hopefully we can be just as united as your organization, United Hatzalah. Thank you so much for joining us today, Eli. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and I'm sure that our listeners are going to be encouraged as well.
Thank you so much for having me. And we're waiting for celebrating Am Yisrael Chai together, Yom Ha'atzmaut. Hopefully the planes will be flying above Tel Aviv, showing the power of American incredible planes and Israeli pilots, and thanking Hashem for the victory. And we have a missile.
Well, I think it's the perfect time for me to run into the shelter, but amen. I really look forward to having an Independence Day, Yom Ha'atzmaut, as you said, that will be celebratory. And, you know, sometimes the bell rings, and right now the bell is calling us to end our interview and for me to go into the shelter. So thank you so much, Eli. We'll speak again.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. I am back from the shelter. We had 8 visits in the morning between 6:30 a.m. and 1 o'clock in the afternoon, just in and out of the shelter today. That's Thursday. And I just came in from 2 back-to-back sirens, and it's been very difficult to get work done today. It's been very difficult to eat. We've been doing everything in between. Thank God I am in one piece, and all I have to do is enter and exit the shelter, and so far, so good. But it's definitely been difficult to sleep, eat, function, do work. So I made an extra effort today to make sure that I got myself all pulled together, dressed up, hair, makeup, because that makes me feel really good. So I hope that you enjoyed that interview. It took all day to record. Let's now hear a Torah thought by Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York. And by the way, if you listen to the end of his Torah thought about using the Torah as a guideline for how to help other people, you'll see that our interviewee that we just had on, Eli Beer, is a shining example of using the knowledge from the Torah to improve the lives of others. I just don't think that we could have had those pieces be more synchronous than today.
This week's Torah portion continues the sacrificial mitzvot of the Torah, and therefore the Haftorah also extols the Jewish people not to bring empty sacrifices, right? To have the right intentions to turn yourself towards God. And the end of the Haftorah says that let the wise man not boast of his wisdom, or the strong man boast of his strength, or the rich man boast of his riches. Rather, let him boast, let the one who boasts exult in this, that he understands and knows me, for I am God who practices kindness, justice, and righteousness on the earth. Right? So wisdom and strength and material wealth, these are all good things, and they should assist us in fulfilling our mission that God has given us on earth. And they are things that we should aspire to, right? In fact, the sages actually say that the divine presence only rests upon someone who is wise, strong, and wealthy. And in Kabbalah, these qualities embody the sort of three main kavan, the three main lines or axes through which God creates the world, which is wisdom, chachma, strength, gevura, and then in the middle is what's called tiferet, which is beauty. But it could also be rich, like a rich beauty, like wealth, and it kind of brings to mind the idea of a variety of colors and just this mixture of the right and left, which makes it richer and makes it fuller than either the right or the left by itself. So the message of the verse is not that we should denigrate these ideas, but that we need to make sure that they are being used properly, right? Being used selflessly and dedicated towards God's will, which is expressed in the next verse, right? That we emulate him by practicing kindness and justice and righteousness on earth. When that's the main value, so then the wisdom, strength, and wealth are definitely worthy pursuits. And on a deeper level, this doesn't just refer to worldly wisdom, obviously, like it says in the verse, right, that you should know me. It's about divine wisdom, the wisdom and knowledge of Torah. And in that context, God is reminding us that the true measure of how we understand the Torah and godliness and how is how we apply that to the lessons in our life and how successful we are in doing so. So if there's some distance between your knowledge of Torah and God and the type of life that you live, then that shows a lack of depth of your understanding of godly wisdom. So we have to know and understand and appreciate Torah and godliness, and also have to apply that and make sure that we're living that way also. It's not just about knowing what it says, but actually having that make a real impact on your life. So it's great. Go study, go learn, go pray, but make sure that those things are having a real life impact on your life and how you treat other people, how you treat yourself, and how you behave in the world with your business and in your personal relationships. Shabbat shalom.
All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Thursday, March 26th, 2025. Tel Aviv has a low of 13 degrees Celsius and a high of 16 degrees. That's 55 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 61 degrees for the high. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week, and of course, with a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom and drop your email address in. Have a great and productive day and an excellent, restful weekend, everyone. Shabbat Shalom.